Hey there, I'm Lee Rowley, and this is Lee After Dark. Why? Because there's more to being a business leader than just business. Each episode, one brave entrepreneur ejects the elevator pitch and just gets real. Today, I'd like to welcome Kelly McCauley. Kelly, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Lee?
I am fantastic, thank you. It's such a pleasure to meet you today. And thank you for taking the time to come on and share a little bit with us.
I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Well, that's wonderful. So I got to go over the rules. Pretty simple. For the next 20 minutes, we can talk about anything you want but your business. After that, you've got 5 minutes to pitch up a storm. But yeah, every time you mess up and talk about your business during the interview, which generally doesn't happen, you lose 1 minute of pitch time at the end. So we're going to keep you on. Yeah, pressure's on. Are you ready to play?
I am.
Wonderful, Kelly. All right. So what are we going to get into for the next 20 minutes?
Well, first I wanted to say, like, I really love the idea of this, and I enjoy the, it's a pattern interrupt from, you know, most of the time when I'm going on a podcast, I am looking to talk about a particular strategy or something, but I love the idea of just talking about anything.
And it's, yeah. Thank you. And it takes some bravery and some vulnerability, I think, to do that, because not everybody, I've had people tell me, I'm not getting away from my shtick. I made my shtick for a reason, right?
Yeah.
But you're willing to just go beyond that. And that's wonderful. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. You know, what jumped into my head this morning was to talk about adoption.
Okay.
So I'm adopted. I'm the youngest in a large family, and I'm the only child that's not biological. So I grew up feeling pretty special about being adopted. I knew from as long as I can remember, they read me a book about being adopted. So there was never a horrifying moment of discovery that some children have of finding out that they're adopted. I always knew, and I always felt really good about it. Being adopted, as I got older, felt like a little bit of a bonus because there's alcoholism in my family, and I don't have the genes that the rest of my siblings had and struggled with. Of course, I had my own struggles, but for the most part, I just always felt really positive about being adopted. And then when I was just 19, I found myself pregnant, unmarried, unprepared to provide for a child. And I know as soon as I found out I was pregnant, I knew I was going to place my child up for adoption. And even though, you know, there was a lot of shock. I mean, everyone I met who would ask me, like, what are you having, a girl or a boy? What are you going to name your baby? And I would always be really flip about it and say, adopted. Other people are really uncomfortable with it, but I was very comfortable with it myself. I knew I was making a good choice. It's interesting. So I'm 53. My first child, I had a boy, and, so he's, 33, 34. Now today, and it's so strange to think about him out there in the world. So the reason that this comes up for me to talk about today is that I have known for about 10 years that I would like to adopt at some point. I am adopted. I've placed a child for adoption, and I am reaching a point in my life where I feel like it's coming up on time. I'm ready to to settle in and open up my home to give someone else true acceptance. And I'm thinking it's very likely that it'll be a teenager, someone who may have given up on the idea of ever finding a real family. I really want to open the door for that.
Okay. So tell me, because this is very interesting, and you know, it sort of parallels with some of my story, and I'll get into that in a minute, but you know, at 53, you would definitely have a different perspective on raising a child or supporting a child than you would at 19 by a wide margin. I mean, you know, that may be understatement of the year territory there, but you know, so tell me about that though. I mean, because, you know, when you think of, like, you know, basically becoming that involved in a child or adolescent's world, having, you know, the knowledge that you have at 53, and I'm 46, so I don't have to tap dance. I'm not that far off. You know, how do you think that would play in?
Well, when I was 19, I was making $6 an hour. I had no family support. I had no relationship with the father. No foundation from which to help a child build their life.
Okay.
I married a couple of years after that, and I did go on and have another son who is 29. One of the things that I said to myself when I found out I was pregnant the first time was, I don't want to be a single mother. I want my child to have the experience of a family, a whole family. Single moms, I'm not saying you're not a real family, but I wanted to have a husband to help me raise my child. And interestingly enough, my marriage was so short, I ended up being a single parent 3 years later anyways.
Oh.
but so I've raised my son, and now he's married and he's started giving me grandchildren. What's different today, on the most practical sense, is money. You know, I had no money, no credit. I was just an absolute disaster at 19. And, you know, today I have stability. It's so rough. I mean, any parent will tell you how difficult it is to be raising children and not have enough money. When you're worrying about paying the rent or keeping the utilities turned on, and your child needs something, it's just the worst feeling. I have that solid foundation today, and a lot of personal growth and maturity and emotional health that I did not have as a young woman, mm-hmm. to prepare me for a fresh experience of parenthood. Right. I've always liked teenagers. My son was great, you know. I mean, it's not that he was a perfect angel every day of his teen life, but I think that what you see in teenagers is pretty much what you look for in teenagers is pretty much what you get. And I like teenagers. I like their energy and their willingness to try new things and see new things and experience the world. I want to experience life through some teen eyes again. I think it would be a really great way to spend my 50s, to be honest.
It's absolutely fascinating. And just real quick, is the parallel I mentioned before, that most of my listeners know that my wife and I lost our only child about 7 years ago. And she was 10. And so we've been off and on about that. And I'm, you know, again, I'm 46, she's 42. So the age issue is something that has come up with us. So I was really interested to see your perspective on that. I mean, I know that, you know, that what you've stated, having that maturity and the stability and things that we don't always have to offer when we're younger is a strong argument against the sort of legislative ageism that tends to limit our options when it comes to adoption. That's something that we have found in our research, that, you know, particularly from other countries, the options can be sometimes limited if you're over 40.
Are you saying that there are organizations that turn you down because you're in your 40s?
Absolutely. There are organizations that list age requirement, maximum age requirements.
Gotcha.
So that was something that kind of put us at an impasse. Plus, I think that, you know, again, that was 7 years ago, and I think that, you know, personally, that it took that long to even, you know, have the potential to do that again. But you know, I just kind of wondered, I mean, in your research, is that what you found, or, you know, what have you found in terms of, you know, the availability and how it suits what you're looking for in an adoptive child relationship?
So my research is extremely minimal, just a little bit of poking around. I have a gut instinct that the life that's meant to come into my life is gonna show up, maybe not even through a system. I don't know what that means, other than all my life I've collected people, you know, in my life. I don't own a home right now. We're transitioned. My son and I are practicing multi-generational living in preparation for them buying a house in a year or so.
Okay.
But when I owned a home, I always had somebody staying with me. And, you know, sometimes that was a young person. Sometimes that was a teenager. Sometimes that was a young single mom. I think that when I buy my next home, that something's just going to happen. And it's going to become clear. I am willing to work with the foster care system. That scares me, to be honest. Last Christmas, I really wanted to do something to support. I'm not yet ready to open my home. So last year, I'm like, I really want to support someone who is taking that big, big, bold, brave step right now. So I went. I met a gal who works at a foster organization, and she hooked me up with a woman who had just adopted 3 siblings, and turned out she had adopted 4 other children in previous years. So I met with her and donated money to her to have a great Christmas. And I just was blown away by her willingness to have her life completely changed by 3 small children all at once. So if something doesn't happen organically in the timeline that I feel like it will show up, I will go back to that organization and do the paperwork. When you have willingness to adopt older children, the age requirements don't come into play in the same way as when you're looking for, you know, a baby or small child, because there are so few people that can overcome their fears about adopting a teen. There's a lot of made up stuff. There's a lot of truth, and there's a lot of made up stuff about teenagers who've been in the system, that they're angry, that they have emotional issues, that there's a reason that no one else has adopted them yet. And it's true. And a lot of it is just like, that's what people make up about it. So that's what they go looking for, and that's what they find. And I was an angry teenager.
Same here.
Growing up in a house full of alcoholics wasn't pretty. But there were people who saw me for the real hurting person I was and loved me through it. And I want that. I want to be able to look at someone and say, I see you. I see that your life has been crap and that you're not sure it's ever going to change, but I'm here to offer you something different.
That's really cool. I absolutely love your approach to it. That's beautiful. And it's, you know, I tell people that now follow its own path, or however you want to look at it, that, you know, sometimes it is just a matter of trusting in the process. And I had a friend who was a huge fan of Stoic philosophy. And one of his favorite phrases was embrace the suck. And, you know, by that he meant that, you know, that there's value and goodness and growth to come, not from only from the good things you bring into your life, but from the challenges. And
yeah,
that, you know, it all is there for a reason.
Yeah.
I've always appreciated that philosophy, but, you know, especially, you know, hearing you apply it to, you know, your real life and just seeing, like, look, this will play out how it's meant to play out.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. When I was young, especially when I was in my teens and a very young adult, like I said, I was angry. I had a lot of self-protective mechanisms set up. And I would say, this is who I am. If you don't like it, you know, bite me. And I really believed that, like, all the way into my 30s, I thought, this, I am who I am. This is who I am. And it's never going to change. So if you can't be in relationship with me, that's just too bad. Well, in my 40s, I began to question that myself, like, who said this is who I am, you know? I came to realize that idea of I am who I am, take me or leave me, is a very fixed mindset. As if there were some mold that once I hit 18, that mold was set and nothing else could change. That exactly. Fixed mentality. And I shifted over to a growth mindset of wondering, is this who I want to be? Do I want to be this, this distrusting? Do I want to protect myself at the cost of true intimacy and in friendships? Do I want to judge other people like this? You know, because that's the thing, is for my experience of, is in protecting myself and distrusting others, meant a lot of judgment. I was judging other people and I was judging myself, right. And I wasn't very happy. You know, I was muddling through, you know, but once I really leaned over and started to question, who am I and who do I want to be? What do I want to create in the world? I just let go of the fixed mindset about myself and started to grow. And then I could start to look at other people and realize, you know, they're not fixed in time and space either. So why judge them? Why not just go into relationship with them, believing that they're capable of change? And man, if I could have gotten that message at 17, woohoo! I mean, how different that could have been.
But you can't get the message without the process.
Yeah.
You know, bringing us back to embrace the suck. So, you know, it is what it is. But though, that's absolutely, you know, I'm blown away. And, you know, that's what I love about doing this, is that I never really know, when I turn on that record button, what we're getting into and what's going to happen. But it always comes out just like magic. And, you know, we part ways going, man, we're glad we did this. So, you know, I really appreciate you and being open and vulnerable and, you know, talking about this. you know, we've just about hit our 20 minutes. So if you have any final thoughts on this end of things before we get into the business stuff.
You know, this, my, what probably won't surprise you is that being part of a community has become very important to me. Growing up in an alcoholic household, it was an isolated life. And coming into my 20s with all the protective mechanisms, I was not much of a joiner. I only had a few friends, and it was really easy for them to cross me and me end up being mad at them. So I was really isolated for a long time. I really came to embrace and crave community in my life. Finding that first in a great church, and then finding it later in other organizations, community has ended up being really important in my business as well.
It has become so important, and I'm seeing an overall shift, really. Even, you know, and I'm part of the online marketing community primarily, and there's been a huge shift from, you know, what I call the hero mentality, or the guru mentality, to more of a community mentality. It's just, it's so inspiring to see people come out and say, you know what, you know, this is what we need. We can't do this ourselves. So that's really, really cool.
Yep.
Very cool. Well, I really appreciate you have completed the Lee After Dark 20-minute not talking about your business challenge. So yay. And invisible confetti and all that. So being a man of my word, I want to make sure you have 5 minutes to talk about your business, how people can get in touch with you. The floor is yours.
Oh, thank you. So in 2003, I started an internet radio show. This was pre-podcasting. The following summer, podcasting was invented, and I'm so glad it was, because internet radio was tough. I had to teach people how to find and listen to my show back then. But my first podcast was Work at Home Moms Talk Radio. And I discovered that when I talked about the stuff I was passionate about and interviewed other people, that a community grew around the show. And that was my first glimpse of, wow, like I'm not just growing an audience here. I'm growing a community. They're not just interested in me and my guests. They're interested in each other. And that led to the launch of a paid membership program, and that was in 2004. I'm no longer Work at Home Moms Talk Radio. My son grew up, moved out. I rebranded. Today, I am Love People and Make Money, and everything I do is about content marketing and community building. I believe that when you create content that really matters, when you talk about stuff that actually gets a response from people, when you tell stories, when you share the real deal, when you let go of the hype and the nonsense, that people are really drawn in by that. And when they are drawn in, they're looking for something more than just your services or your coaching or your product. They're looking to be in relationship with one another. So give them a way to do that. That's everything I do these days is about being able to share a message, tell a story, provide some information, teach people how to do something, but also give them a path to be connected with one another, because that's what ultimately helps them grow their business. LovePeopleMakeMoney.com is my home on the web. That's where I blog and podcast and have lots of training opportunities.
Awesome. And we'll make sure we'll have that link in the show notes too, so that people can get in touch with you directly and find out more about you. So, I found this to be true, that creating community is the way to go. And, you know, I have people argue with me and say that, you know, they're not on LinkedIn to make fake friends or, you know, things like that. It's just, there are always going to be those people who don't get it. And, you know, don't worry about it, because, you know, there's people like you and me out there.
Like, what is a fake friend? That's so funny.
Yeah, I know. I know that's an actual quote. You know, and I got a cut and paste message from a marketer, and you know, I called him on it, and he says, "Well, you know, I'm not here to play nice and make fake friends. I'm here to sell." And I'm like, okay, well, I'm impressed. So impressed.
Yeah.
But so I'm totally down with what you do. Again, is that lovepeoplemakemoney.com, and any parting words?
My best parting words for anybody listening to this and being curious more about how to create that community is to take a minute and think about if the content you're blogging or the podcast interview you're doing, think of it as being delivered at an in-person event. I do host in-person events. My Love People Make Money Live is in October 2020 in Atlanta.
Oh, cool.
Think about if the podcast interview you're delivering were in front of a group of 50 people, 100 people, would they sit silently afterwards and just stare at you and wait to have a conversation with you? No, they would be engaging with one another. Mm-hmm. About what they just heard. And what do you want that engagement to be? And realize that you have that opportunity to create that space online. And are you offering it? If you have something to say, if you've got a heart for a community and you want to be of service to them, before you think about how you can get them to give you a buck, think about how you can give them community. Because when they think of you as the person that helped them find their friends and contemporaries, that is a really powerful place where profit always shows up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. This is a good episode. They're all good, but, you know, this is fantastic, and I'm totally on board. So, well, really cool. Again, thank you, Kelly, for joining us today. It's been such a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you, Lee. Great space you created here.
Thanks. We are out of time, but if you found Lee After Dark more entertaining and relevant than most of the drac out there, subscribe to the Lee After Dark YouTube channel, and now get Lee After Dark in your pants. We're on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor FM, Stitcher, Breaker, Pocket Cast, and who the heck knows where else, so you can enjoy us wherever you stick your phone. Until next time, this is Lee Rolly with my new friend, Kelly McCousey. Be present and be well.